Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Well, the weather seems to be changing here in London town. It's become very autumnal. It's still warm-ish. We've had a lot of rain, a little bit of sunshine, but it seems in the space of a few days, we've had the back end of summer and now we're heading towards winter. I hope that everything is okay with you. Thank you so much for all of the wonderful emails that you send me all the time and the comments about the show and the things that you said about the end of the TV show and the fact that we continue on radio, all gratefully received and every single comment noted. And as I say, one of these days, I hope soon, but one of these days, I hope to be able to tell you the full story of all of that. That day has not arrived. Now, on this edition of The Unexplained, we're going to get an update from the great Linda Moulton Howe from earthfiles.com. I felt it was about time we spoke to Linda in the light of all of the revelations that we've had this year. David Grush, the NASA session that is due, I think, on the 19th of October. I'm losing track of time here with everything that's going on. But there are those who say that we are in the wheelbarrow and being pushed uphill towards that pinnacle of the truth being told. I'm less sure of that now than I was, although I would like it to be so. I think there is a truth to be disclosed. I just don't know whether we're going to get it. And that's my feeling. And nobody will be more happy than me to be proved 100% wrong. Now, at the moment, I'm frantically preparing for the cruise, which I'm looking forward to. It's going to be hard work for me, but it's going to be great fun too, and it'll be great to be coming back to the United States and to see Canada for the first time. So as you know, the cruise is between, for me, the 22nd of October and the 2nd or 3rd of November, then I fly back to London. So what it means is that there will be a bit of a break, not long in podcasts, simply because there is a limit on the number of things that I can, by myself, on my own, me, myself, I can do. So there will be a brief, just a brief pause in the podcasts, and there are 800 hours of podcast to go back over. The radio shows will continue, so you will hear me on the two Sundays that I won't be here, 22nd and 29th of October. So that's the way things are. I think that's all I have to say, apart from thank you very much to my webmaster, Adam, for keeping the wheels turning, keeping the podcasts coming out to you. And I'm glad that you're enjoying them after all of these years. The guest on this edition, like I say, Linda Moulton Howe from earthfiles.com. And we're going to talk about, well, disclosure, but also how that ties in with all the work that she's brought to you over all of the decades and still ties into that work. So I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation. And it's one where I can sit back and drink in what Linda has to say. And I hope very much that you enjoy it. So that's the state of play with me. There will be a short pause in the podcast after the couple that you're going to hear now, and then I will return and we'll make some plans for the winter. And 2024, can you believe that that is coming? I find that so hard to even begin to contemplate. But at the moment, I'm sort of rushing around, so I hope I don't sound too distracted. But I've got a million things to do. I'm trying to sort out my flat, my apartment, and get it into, you know, reasonable order for me to be able to come back to. And I'm trying to plan podcasts and sort out radio shows and do all sorts of stuff. But as they say in London and in England, it's better than working. You know, I've never had a proper job. I've always spoken into a microphone for a living. So what's not to like, eh? All right, let's get to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the home of the great Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, thank you very much for coming on my show.
Well, Howard, I tell you, on this day of the 13th of October of 2023, I feel such deep soul sadness over what is happening in Gaza and Israel, because it is like a continuous metaphor of centuries that humanity has such a difficult time not fighting with each other, and it is a mystery. And if you look at what people in the abduction syndrome have long said, that we are a genetic manipulation by a variety of advanced intelligences, I always say, well, why would we have been made so that we seem to always move toward violence instead of peace?
Well, a great philosopher, and I was very bad at philosophy at university, Linda, but Thomas Hobbes wrote, I'm sure it was Thomas Hobbes, but I've never forgotten the quote, "Man is fundamentally aggressive and acquisitive." That's in our nature. Now, I'm not referring that comment before anybody starts to hit the keyboard to anything that is going on so terrifyingly and so sadly in Gaza right now. I am referring here to the nature of mankind. So please don't take that as a specific comment. You know, you have to justify and caveat everything these days, Linda, as you will know. But that is the truth about mankind. So I think as a species, Linda, you know, we were going to get into this in 5 or 10 minutes, but let's do it now. I think we're desperately in need of saving.
Well, the whole point of what I'm trying to make is I have spent so much of my career talking with people who have been in military, in aerospace, in medicine, in engineering, and they have firsthand information about another intelligence or intelligences that have been interacting with this planet for at least 278 million years. That comes from a man who worked in the Defense Intelligence Agency for 23 years. There was a reach out to me in December of 1999 by one of his colleagues, both of them working on UFOs, but their cover was something else, and the other worked for the World Bank. And they wanted to meet with me to talk about what this man felt that I needed to know, because he had heard me on Coast to Coast and all of the various media that I had been doing in the, what would have been 79 on, when I did A Strange Harvest in the CBS station in Denver about animal mutilations linked to UFOs. And so now we're at 1999, 20 years later. And this man is retiring, and they organized this meeting. It is truly the most profound discussion that I have ever had. It went on for 7 hours. It was our bladders that finally gave out. And what this man was doing was a gift. He wanted me to know, without any attribution I have never violated with anyone, that, as he said, Linda, my job for 23 years in the Defense Intelligence Agency was to study and analyze the competition and conflict. I remember that very specifically. Competition and conflict of three competing extraterrestrial civilizations who have been using Earth, and he said 270 million years that night. It was last year that I got a very important communication from a, we'll just say, somebody who works in a very large aerospace company, who said, I want you to know I have heard your description of your meeting with the DIA analyst in December 1999. And you said he told you that these three extraterrestrial civilizations have been competing with each other on Earth for 270 million years. I want you to know that we have it refined to 278 million, and someday people will know specifically what happened. Now, what is the next most important part of the 7-hour discussion that everybody today on Earth should know, but no one has ever been told? It was this, that the three competing civilizations, reptilian background one, Nordic, white, a second, and the third, a variety of tall grays that are biological but have a huge camaraderie of various kinds of AI. Most of the things that humans have described in the last, let's say, 5 centuries have usually been the artificial intelligence that has either been with or presaged the arrival of anything that was biological. That was important, but here's the kicker. He said all three are experts at genetic manipulation. They compete with each other through genetic manipulation on any planet in which they are in competition. And he said, The blonde ones can appear to humans as reptilian or gray. The grays can appear to humans as reptilian or Nordic. The reptilians can appear to humans as Nordic or grays. And that all of this is done through a combination of advanced genetic manipulation, but also technological, and this was another part that he emphasized that I think is so important, that the non-humans have the ability to go directly to the language center or the image center in human brains, activate it. It would explain the so-called shape-shifting predators in the Vietnam War. I talked with several people who had been in the Vietnam War and said that they had, when Arnold Schwarzenegger did the movie about seeing something change in the jungle, that a lot of people saw that, and that this is in this category of being able to either manipulate human minds or to literally change the physical appearance by something that is technological, like projecting a hologram. And after the 7 hours, I know at the end that I felt like I had finally been given a lens in which to look at everything from animal mutilations to human abductions to genetic manipulation, how far back in time, what is the conflict over? And that's the part. What is the conflict over? One part of the answer that he gave, and I've heard subsequently just in the last few, 4 or 5 years, humans do not understand how extraordinary planet Earth is. There are zillions of planets. We know that now from the work that the James Webb Telescope is doing. But to have a planet that is 93 million miles from a yellow sun that is at the middle of its life, and have a balance of a tremendous amount of water, more water actually than land, and then that the temperature between the sun and that planet Earth is moderate enough to be able to sustain all kinds of life experiments, and that what we are not understanding is how long this planet has been considered a laboratory. And he stressed that with me that night. And he said, eventually, the Earth will be told the truth. But he said that there are so many power centers in Washington that don't want any of this ever to be told to the world population.
So, Linda, do you think that that is what is playing out at the moment? We had David Grush, who didn't say very much of what you just told me, speaking to us on the 26th of July at the Congressional Oversight Committee. Do you believe that that is the drama that is playing out at the moment? The drama, I'm saying, behind the scenes between those who want to reveal and those who do not?
Here's the problem. I understand what you're asking. If there was serious commitment in the Department of Defense, let's say at the JSOC level, which is really important, that's the Joint Special Operations Command, and they have tremendous control on what is happening. Here, let's go back to the day that Grush and the two pilots presented information that was accurate from my point of view to the representative from Tennessee, Burchett's House subcommittee hearing. And the 24 hours later, after the TV cameras were turned off, the next morning, what comes out of the Pentagon from the new Aero office being directed by a man named Sean Kirkpatrick? David Grush is not accurate. There is no evidence of anything extraterrestrial. And so you had in 24 hours, after what I think was an honest presentation to the Burchett House Subcommittee, you have the Pentagon contradicting attacking the credibility. And that is what happened that Philip J. Corso wrote so well about in his book, The Day After Roswell. He was a colonel who was alive and working on UFO affairs when President Dwight D. Eisenhower was president. And he told me personally, face-to-face, but he wrote about it extensively in The Day After Roswell, that there was, and this was his word, this was Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso's word to me, Linda, it was internecine warfare in the Pentagon the whole time I was there. The warfare was that there were brass that did not want anything about the extraterrestrial interactions, not only with our planet, but with the entire solar system, did not want any of this to reach the human population. And I stand here right now thinking I'm in 2023 at the end of this year, and that World War II was 86 years ago, depending on where you start the year, and that we have barely moved from all of the policies of lies and denials from World War II to this day. That Grush and those pilots were a wonderful first step, and other pilots who have been trying to come forward. But every time something honest is said, somebody else in the Pentagon pulls the rug out from under it, as if it's strategic, because then everybody says, well, I don't know what to believe. And that's exactly the terrible psychological situation I think a lot of things are in now.
Well, there's so much to get into here, but I'm not here to defend the DOD, not at all, but the statement they put out said, okay, there is no evidence, that was the word, no evidence, but if anybody would like to give us evidence, then the door is open for whistleblowers. And we're told at the moment there may be 40 whistleblowers, there may be more in the wings ready to go. Do you know anything about that?
The last I heard from a really reliable source was 2 weeks ago and said there's 6 more that are coming, Linda, that they're going to be extremely important. That's what I heard 2 weeks ago. It very well, I mean, there's thousands of people over the last 80 years that are still alive that have a lot of information, and so far they're not talking. But the thing about this is, I think that David Grush told absolutely the truth. I know that David Fravor, a very respected pilot, I've interviewed him when we were doing Phenomena Radio. I interviewed him for, it was an hour or 2 hours. I find him to be just impeccably straightforward and honest. And the other pilot who saw the what would we call it, the tic-tac type, and reported it. They're telling the truth. But within 24 hours, the Pentagon is questioning and saying there's no evidence of anything extraterrestrial, when all of us who have been exposed to a lot of whistleblowers, honestly, and things I have seen in video and photo, we know that that's not true. We know that what these 3 people standing in front of Representative Burchett from Tennessee were telling the truth, because there is internecine warfare. And that means that there are a lot of people in aerospace science and the Pentagon who feel that we are way past the moment where the whole world should be told the truth. Everything that they know about our genetic creation by extraterrestrials up to this day, and then importantly introduce who everyone I've ever talked to says, the tall whites that are 10 to 12 feet tall, and that may be why they aren't something that people have encountered physically much on the planet, but that they are the genius brains behind the evolutionary development of a standing up humanoid species, and that they interact in ways that are extremely profound and complex. Well, why can't we be introduced to what everybody I've talked to said, the tall whites have a vested interest in seeing the human evolution experiment evolve positively. Well, if that's the case, why, Howard, why can we not be told the truth and be introduced to an extraterrestrial civilization involved with our planet for 278 million years? Our government knows it. What is the reason to keep humans deaf and blind on this?
You talk in your latest YouTube video, which I like very much, Linda. You are a master of that format. You talk about the tall whites and why they are, in many ways, the sort of roulette masters of the entire thing. The only thought that I had, and I'd like to talk with you just briefly about a conversation you had with a guy called Brian. I think he's in Minnesota. But the idea of the tall whites being these very powerful, very striking beings and having a lot of influence, it doesn't square, does it, with the idea of competing species of aliens all trying to get us into conflict with each other? If you know what I'm saying, if the tall whites are so, if they're so smart, why don't they put us completely on the right track?
Okay, I've had that discussion with others. And here's the impossible thing for you, me, or anybody to prove, but it could be the truth, that unless you know the timeline, if you go back 4.6 billion, you're at the beginning of this solar system, this particular solar system, this particular planet. And over the 4.6 billion, how many times did different extraterrestrials come into this solar system for a variety of reasons? And that by the time that we reached 278 million years ago, and that there was genetic manipulation of already evolving primates in order to create Homo sapien, that's in that document that I was shown at Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque in 1983 when I was working on the HBO, or trying to work on the HBO project. And this was a document shown to me at Kirtland. These extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA and already evolving primates could be Homo erectus to create Homo sapien. That was a direct quote. I've never forgotten it. And another that's emblazoned in my brain is, all questions and mysteries about the evolution of Homo sapien on this planet have been answered, and this project is closed. And the project name on that page, at the top of that page, was all caps, Project Garnet. And I remember, Linda, remember your birth date. My birth date is in January, and the birthstone is Garnet.
The Garnet stone.
Yeah, and so now, if the planetary solar system is 4.6 billion, if the manipulation of DNA and already evolving primates began 278 million years ago, at what point in 278 million years, with three extraterrestrial groups competing with each other, did the tall whites that are considered to be spiritual and talk about the fact that the whole universe is conscious, and that if we knew the truth, that we would have the power to resonate in frequency actually with the universe? That's one of the perspectives of the tall whites. When did they show up? Have they always had a vested interest in trying to protect and promote the biological evolution of these original primates, manipulated DNA, found that there was a reason to protect, and we are the product, and that they have been, in a sense, like the watchers that Ray Fowler and Betty Andreessen always talked about, that she had interactions with, what were they? Tall, tall, tall whites, you can see in her illustrations. Who are these beings? And the part that bothers me, if they are the geniuses that I've heard people in aerospace say, I've worked right shoulder to shoulder with a tall white in engineering at a major corporation, and they are incredible, and that we hit an engineering problem and they can solve it like this, and they are amazing, and Linda, they really truly want to see Homo sapien, current humanity, evolve past war, evolve past judging each other on skin color. They want to see humanity join them, so to speak, in a relationship with the universe that would then somehow promote the evolution of the soul. Now, I've had those discussions, and I think all of us would be thrilled if we knew that there was something so advanced that it can move 50 light years in seconds because it knows how to move point to point. And yet, in the transition right now, in 23 going forward for this decade, you, I, others who are deeply involved in investigating all of this, we started hearing, I know I did, at least back to 2019, because it was before the pandemic reared its head in January of 2020. In 2019, coming from remote viewers, coming from abductees, not just in the United States, but around the world, because I get communications from everywhere like you do, there came a pattern, and I remember becoming very concerned that something bad was coming, something bad was going to happen. When COVID, and I think the memory that I have, that just I stood up and walked toward the TV news set, and it was the video, the first video that came out in January of 2020 of people in Japan that were dropping dead on the sidewalk while people were running a camera. And it was so extraordinary that I remember standing in front of the TV thinking, is this it? Is this what people in the abduction syndrome have been saying, that they were having repeated dreams about something horrible coming? Well, COVID certainly has been horrible. But as the 2020 went to 2023, more and more people in the abduction syndrome than I think I've ever received from before were saying, no, this is not it, the end. There's more coming. It's going. We see fire in buildings. That would have been a lot of what I was getting last year. Well, what are we experiencing now on our TV? Fire in buildings all over Gaza and Israel. And you keep I keep thinking, it's almost as if there are beings that have known what is coming, and some of them have been trying to guide, warn, through dreams, through abductions, but something else keeps holding everything that is trying to be honest at bay. And that gives me this feeling of, what exactly is Earth right now to competing forces, as that man told me in December of 1999.
And this kind of brings us to that guy that you spoke with. I think he got in touch with you. This is Brian in Minnesota. And Brian in Minnesota claims, and first of all, I thought, oh yeah, okay. What is the guy's a musician? Maybe he's just, you know, been kind of, you know, using his creative powers just a little bit too much, and this all sounds very unlikely. But he sounds like a very credible witness in all of this, and he claims to have interacted personally with the Tall Whites, which is a very, very rare thing.
That's right, but let's put the context of why I interviewed him and did that report. When people contact me and they say, I cannot be identified from my work, from my family, but I have seen your Earth Files YouTube channel, and I think that you really need to know this information, and it happened to me. That's how he approached. And when people do approach me that way, I really do pay attention. And then there were a few comments, but it really solidified for me. It was a week and a half ago when I did the recorded interview. And and here is why I think it is so significant, that he was working on a new song. He had a guitar and he had another instrument. He's plucking strings. There's frequencies in the room. And that the way he describes it, because I've heard, we'll say similar, but not identical to this, suddenly he's been in a conscious state. He's not asleep, but he decided that he was going to meditate. And all of us who have meditated, that means you can go from sitting in a chair reading a book, but you still move into a different frequency relationship between your mind, your soul, your body, when you try to relax into what I consider to be a meditation frequency that I've done in my life. And that's what he decided to do, because he was working hard on this music and he needed a mental break. And as he went into the meditation frequencies on purpose to give himself a break in doing the music scores, that's when, as he said at one point in the interview, he didn't know what was happening, but he went from the room he was in with the musical instruments, and he feels like, sees, it looks like glass in front of him, and he is seeing two what appear to be identical clones, taller than he is. He's 6 foot tall. And the part that really caught me, as he began to tell me the story, and I'm recording, glass, all the way back to the early 1990s, was the very first time that I began receiving letters with sketches from six different people over the course of about 4 or 5 months in the year 19. It was the 92 is when I started working with them, and I think that the dates were between 1990 and 92, but they all six were in that that time span. And they're from various states. None of these people know each other. I never cross-pollinate. And here I'm getting these illustrations of what look like humans and ETs in these long vertical tubes, six different people, six different parts of the country, drawing the same tube looking, describing seeing both humans and tall ETs and others in what they considered to be preservation tubes that were related with a technology that could sustain the biological body through light at the top and the bottom. And here was the main question back when I was working in the early 1990s for my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, of which everything I'm talking about is in that book. And it was, what is it that they want? Why these bodies? And out of all six, in various degrees, they kept going to the soul. Now, I know that depending upon a variety of philosophies, religions, human experiences, many people are convinced that the soul is a reality. It is the power source for life in any biological life. And there are other people who think it is like a Valentine, that it is a nice concept but is not a reality. Today in 2023, what I've been exposed to since 1990 to this day, I am convinced without a single question. The soul, what the Greeks called the psyche, is the most important part of Homo sapiens sapiens. That if we understood that part of what the tall whites' interest in seeing us evolve is that we ended up with what has been described as a very strong and special soul in this genetic experiment on Earth. But the tall whites know it, others know it, and here you get into one of those very difficult subjects. Could the preservation technology, the tubes with the light, be because some of the non-humans want the powerful human soul? They want access to it, and that they have built a technology that can sustain biological bodies in which powerful souls can go in and out or be preserved.
Do you think that they are wanting something? I'm sorry to jump in, Linda, but do you think that their interest in the soul derives from the fact that we've got something that they haven't got?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Howard, you have gone to exactly. And I remember it was about 5 years ago, and it was a male, and I think he was in the military. And we were talking about sort of around, I'm going into great detail now, we were talking sort of around the whole issue of what would the extraterrestrial goal be for manipulation of DNA and a whole bunch of life forms on the planet. And I remember when he said, Linda, I really think that the human soul is at the top of the list because they don't have it and they want it.
And if they get it, if they master it, if they learn what it is, and, you know, what it is, I think, is the essence of all of us human beings, does that make them a threat to us in some way? Does that make them an adjunct to us in some way? If they get that DNA technology, or it's not DNA, that's a bad way of putting it. If they get that bit of technology, that bit of usness, if they acquire
energy,
that
energy,
thank you. If they get that bit of energy, the thing that makes us us, do we need to be worrying about that?
You always amaze me with your perceptive questions. I have myself wondered, is it an illusion that there would be very advanced beings who would want to protect us so they could help the soul to evolve, to help cultivate, to help us get onto their level where they can travel 50, 40 light years in seconds? Or is it a deflection? Is it a purposeful deflection? And that I do not, today, sitting here, I do not have any kind of provable answer. But I'll tell you this. There is something about all of the people that I have interviewed over the last, probably didn't start on the Tall Whites with any huge depth until a man in Australia that I interviewed, I think it was 8 years ago. And that was one of the most startling interviews I have ever done for myself personally, because I did not understand the significance of the Tall White that had been like a description from people who were tall and white. And suddenly I was talking with this man in Melbourne, Australia, who had been in a park, and this tall white being came and sat down on a bench, and he became aware that the tall white, that was a name that we eventually called it, and I'm using, he just said, a man who appeared to be very pale in skin, very white hair, everything about him was white, and he sat down in a bench in front of the man I'm interviewing, Benji. And that Benji realized that this man who had just shown up and sat down on this was somehow in his mind, that he knew that he was getting information and questions coming at a very rapid rate in his mind, and he could only connect it to the man who had just appeared. That was how this human and tall white first communication, face to face, physical, in a park in Australia, in which the human realized that what was coming into his mind was from this man. And there was something about it, Howard. It makes sense to me that that is the way that we would feel in a first a disorientation with somebody trying to telepathically communicate. And eventually you would become more comfortable, as abductees do. And then they get telepathic thought. They get images. They get symbols that come across the forehead. All of that happened with that man in Australia. And so I had heard hundreds of cases of people trying to understand and absorb and fully relate to what was coming into their mind's eye in symbol, in light, in images. I'd heard that going back years and years. And there is something about the feeling that the tall whites, he's not the only person who's described that, that they simultaneously leave the human in front of them not afraid. That to me seems really significant. The human is not afraid, even if they're 10 to 12 feet high, and the person it was a 6 foot two. Okay, if they haven't generated fear, then don't you look at them at least with, you are trying to communicate.
I think,
which is more than everybody else has been doing for the last 86 years.
Sure. But I wonder, again, going back to one of your great YouTube videos, one from earlier this year, you talk again about this Majestic 12 Psalm 101 document that is sort of a handbook for those who are dealing with these cases, a top secret, only for those eyes who are authorized document. And that document talks about two types of entities, which those of us who've looked into these things, I think anybody who's watched science fiction will be very aware of, plus the variety of craft. And also, you talked on that video about where the different kinds of material and the different kinds of beings, the dead ones, the alive ones, the bits of craft, the crashed technology, where they go to. And it's mostly Area 51 or Wright-Patterson. I'm just wondering...
And the one that is only in the Psalm 101 document, at the back in the list of the with the letters and numbers of where everything was distributed, it was BSS, and that was living. It says living non-humans, and for a long time, maybe 4 or 5 years. What is this? Asking people, never know. And I was then sent a document that said, Linda, here is the answer, and that BSS is Barking Sands in Hawaii. That was a military base. Had you ever heard about Barking Sands in Hawaii before?
Not
I had?
Till now, and I've been to Hawaii, and I didn't realize there were such things in that beautiful place. Do you think... Does that facility still exist? Do you think, if it does, that those things are still there?
I have asked myself that same question, and I think that if you look over MJ-12, all those documents, Psalm 101, the Eisenhower document, that there is a pattern from FDR and Truman on, in which there was an inertia keeping every secret, every new secret title, every new secret group sort of tied to each other in a place. That cuts down other people learning anything, right? If you just keep keeping the MJ-12 group, talking only to Forrestal, talking only in a room, in a building, where they had decided in World War II to take living extraterrestrials, that it would be an island out in the Pacific, Barking Sands, where we already had military populations out there. It makes sense that that is what they would keep doing, because the danger of things leaking, if you try to move them, is higher.
That makes absolute sense. You know, somewhere 5 hours flying time from Los Angeles is easier to keep the lid on things than somewhere that is an hour inland from Los Angeles.
That's right. And which ones? I assume the first ones that they got where in the Psalm 101, it talks about the two. One is taller, and the other one is smaller. And from everything we're learning now, in from the, we'll call it the new era of more candidness, is that I think this is a fact you can take to the bank. The original progenitor gray-skinned, large head, black-lensed eyes are a progenitor gray race from a star system called Epsilon Indi, I-N-D-I. You can look at it on a star map. And I think those tall, 7 to 8 feet, very, very thin, gray-skinned, they were involved perhaps in some of the first experimentation in our solar system, because they're not very far away, and that they are the ones that ended up not wanting that, them biologically in their 7 to 8 feet from Epsilon Indi, having to physically go to the new solar system that they were studying and manipulating life, i.e. Earth, Sun. And that they are advanced enough, like the tall whites, that they could make all kinds of biological AI, we would call it, creatures. They will be doing all of the surveying. They will be doing all of the sample collections. And they become our interface on Earth as the gray ETs, when in fact what is behind both of those that were described in the Psalm 101 would be the progenitor tall grays from Epsilon Indi. But did the Epsilon Indi grays populate Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2, the binary star system that Betty Andreessen was the first to be connected to as an abductee, describing the grays with the big black eyes and being in a spaceship where captain, or whatever you want to call, asked, do you know where you are on this three-dimensional star map? And Betty said no. And that the being said, well, if you don't know where you are on here, I can't explain to you where we're from. So I think that the Type 1, EBA, extraterrestrial biological entity, is what, it's an acronym, it's a government acronym. EBAN 1 and EBAN 2 are the creations of the tall grays from Epsilon Indi, and that they were assigned to do a lot of work on this planet, but they were ended up not the only ones. I think that, as it was described to me, that as non-humans have explored, when they find a planet like Earth, everybody wants to experiment in it. Apparently, I'm really serious about this. I think Earth, our planet, is an extraordinary planet for laboratory life experiments. And that doesn't mean that there aren't other existing biologicals or AI on could be a million other planets, but that what we have not understood, and it's the opening lines right in the Bible Genesis, how incredible the Garden of Eden is here. And the whole planet was once upon a time a Garden of Eden.
And talking about experiments, of course, for so many decades you've been involved, and we've talked so many times about the mutilations of not only cattle, but also other animals. Now, it doesn't get into the news as much, certainly this year of 2023, as it has in previous years. There was an outbreak, I think, a year or two ago in France of these things that were widely reported. I think maybe horses were singled out. I know from people like Paul Sinclair here in the Yorkshire area of the UK that something odd has been going on up there for years. There is a tie-in here, I suspect, you know, if we follow this line of thought. But is this stuff still going on at the same pace?
Not at the pace of the 70s. The Sheriff Tex Graves showed me his files. A man working in the Colorado Intelligence Agency, which was CIA, interestingly enough, showed me his files. We're talking about 200, I think, Sheriff Tex Graves, 200 and some, the CIA head of the state intelligence. I think they had 300 or 400 We're talking about files of individual animals that had been reported, and that might have been the 10 more per each of those animals may have been involved with the mutilation. And you, for your audience, in case they are not aware, because a lot of people always express a surprise to me, the bloodless, that's key number one. It, that is the most universal first physical piece that every law enforcement rancher, they come across an animal that is missing an ear, eye, the tongue, jaw, flesh on one half, the sky-facing side, genitals, rectum cored out, and there's not a drop of blood anywhere. Dry excisions that look dark brown, which I was able to prove without any question, working with Dr. John Altshuler, a hematologist pathologist in Denver, and I was able to work with him at the end of the 80s into the 90s before he was unduly killed. He was hit from behind by a car when he was riding his bicycle, and he survived for a while and then succumbed to something like sepsis. He was incredible. He was brilliant. And he was the one who had me going out with Tupperware and formalin. Formalin will keep tissues softer than formaldehyde. It tends to make them harder. So I was going out all the time with formalin solution, with scissors and or scalpel, making sure that I was labeling. This is mutilator cut. This is the sheriff's scissors. Here is mine, encompassing all. And the analysis that he did on for me, and eventually he did the same thing for Robert Bigelow in Nevada. We were all working with John Altshuler, and it was always the same. The mutilation excisions were cooked hemoglobin, cooked collagen. All of them always showed that. The sheriff's scissors cut nothing. There would be no, if they had shown high heat and the scissors, that would have been weird. My scalpel, that they were clearly done with a sharp instrument, but not with something that was cauterizing, but making the cauterizing even more mysterious was over and over again, Dr. Altshuler stressed, there is no carbon residue. What is this technology that is cooking the collagen, cooking the hemoglobin, but it's not leaving a carbon residue? And eventually, I think to this day, I don't think anybody in military or the Department of Justice or the Pentagon has ever said, here is a military weapon that will leave high heat on excision on excisions with no carbon. I don't think anybody has provided that physically to the world. But that was what we were getting in, oh, I don't know how many, because it wasn't just me. It was Robert Bigelow working. We had at least a few hundred examples of here are the excisions of the bloodless, trackless animal mutilation, but going beyond the high heat without carbon, this is the single, to me in many ways, most important definition of what extraterrestrials with what is called molecular extraction technology. And these are the animals in which Sheriff Tex Graves told me he took a vet out on his first. He wanted to do a necropsy right in the field so that they wouldn't waste time getting back to a vet, waiting for a vet to get into a necropsy. He wanted the veterinarian to do a necropsy on one of the 1974, I think this was the case, 1974, when there were hundreds. And Sheriff Graves said that pathologist and vet was looking over the body and decided there was the excision of sexual organs. It was the ear, eye, tongue, jaw. And he said, the sheriff said, he looked up at me and said, I want to open up this animal, and I want to see if all the organs are here. So the sheriff is watching the veterinarian open up with a scalpel the chest of this mutilated, I think it was a cow. And the sheriff is working in the chest. The sheriff is standing, and he said, the vet looked up at him and said, Sheriff, I want you to take a look at this. And by then the veterinarian had white plastic gloves that he had put on his hands before he started going into the chest. And so the sheriff said, in telling me, he said, I don't know what I'm looking at, but I can see the white glove of the plastic glove of the vet. And I said, I don't know what you're showing me. And the sheriff said, the vet took his other hand and said, Do you see this pinkness over my white glove? The sheriff said, yeah, but what is it? He said, Sheriff, look. And he had a flashlight. Where is the heart, Sheriff? And Tex Graves said to me, I couldn't believe it. This was like a 1,700-pound cow. And now I'm seeing for the first time inside of this chest, Linda, not only is there no heart, there's no blood. There's no fluid. He said the aorta is cut, the jugular vein is cut, the heart is missing. There's no, the vet is showing me with the flashlight, it's dry. And on his finger, the vet said, and this is the pericardium. This is what surrounds your heart. It surrounds a cow heart. He said, how did anything get the whole huge 9-inch by 11-inch by 12-inch, which is the measurements of an adult cow heart, big, how did they get this heart out, cut the jugular, cut these veins? And, Sheriff, I'm holding this up. There is not a single cut in this pericardium. This is what was surrounding the heart in this animal. It's still intact. And the sheriff said, I am standing there. I can hardly believe what this vet is showing me with it right in front of my own eyes. And he said, and then the vet started pulling out of the chest and said, don't ever call me out on another one of these, because I am not going to stand up in front of a bunch of media and tell them that what has happened in this animal mutilation is impossible for human medicine and science.
And that's a phenomenon that we've seen repeated across the decades, and it's part of your most important work, but you've done so much other work, which brings me back after a wide-ranging conversation, Linda. And, you know, I just, whenever you talk, I like to, just as I did with the old Art Bell shows, where Art would say, what have you got to report? And Linda would report. You know, I'd hear your tape recorder click when you were playing in the interview bits. And it was beautiful theatre of the ears. So look, at the end of this long ranging conversation, where I think we've spanned your life here, and I'd be glad to do it. Do you think, because we've talked about a lot of things here, and it's clear that whatever we're talking about is so multifaceted and so beyond our ken, as we say here, do you think that through the Intelligence Committee and through NASA, which is holding another presentation, are we going to get even a sniff of any of this at that? Or is this thing called disclosure light years away?
If you take what happened after the House subcommittee hearing of Kirkpatrick at the Aero Office in the Pentagon, basically disparaging the three men who had been in front of that subcommittee hearing, and that the Pentagon Aero Office said that David Grush was basically they were implying was not telling the truth, and that there was no evidence of anything extraterrestrial, was that a signal to send to everybody associated with JSOC and the Pentagon? If you try to do what David Grush has done, we are going to come at you. That's my own guess about what happened. It was signaling within this long-established Pentagon, denying the whole UFO phenomena from World War II on. This was a signal. But I do think that there are other very credible people in the wings. I think that note that I got, that Linda, stand by, there's six more that are coming and they're very important. I think that's going to happen. So who is going to be trying to control the struggle on the next round with some kind of hearing? And we'll know what that answer is after what happens. And I really hope, for the sake of humanity on Earth, that those that are continuing wanting a policy of denial and lies lose. My God, Howard, how much more could we possibly go with policies of lies and denial controlling what is absolutely the big truth? We are not alone in this universe. We never have been. Extraterrestrial biological entities and their artificial intelligence have been on this planet for at least 278 million years. I think you can take that to the bank. And that they have interacted with so many other solar systems that there is other life. And one of the tests also will be It's 2.5 years ago that I was told that where we would have the James Webb open up extraterrestrial civilization would come in TRAPPIST-1. It is a solar system 40 light years from Earth, and TRAPPIST-1, it's a big, long acronym. It's an astronomical sentence. TRAPPIST-1 is a yellow to orange-red sun. It has seven planets. Of those seven planets, the two in the middle, and they do it this way. The sun is the letter A, and then the first planet is B. So you're going to do seven letters, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. H is the last, the furthest out. And they did alphabet letters and numbers. And that the planet that was described to me 2.5 years ago would be called E1. I was sent an illustration. Linda, this looks very Earth-like. The web is going to be used to confirm, and this is were the words sent to me, high civilization on the E1 planet of the TRAPPIST-1 solar system. Now, what happened in the year 2023 when the 2.5 years ago message said that JSOC and the Pentagon, that everybody was working toward this being released about TRAPPIST-1 for April of 2023? Instead, what came out in the spring of 2023 was an astronomical report about planet, the first one. The sun is A, B1. And that it said it's too hot. It could never be water. It went into all of these things about, oh, this planet could never, ever support life. Well, it's the closest to the sun. No one had ever even implied that there was life on the TRAPPIST first closest to the sun. It was always the E planet in the middle that looks like the Earth with a lot of water. And to date, no one in the astronomy world has publicly described anything but the closest planet to the sun and the one furthest away. leaving all of it, why didn't they do analysis on the E planet that was originally 2.5 years ago described as the one with a high civilization? Are they deliberately trying not to have to reveal a high civilization, and that's why they're starting with planets that nobody ever expected there to be life on, but those middle planets may have a high civilization? And this shows you how the games are played. If there's a solar system and they want physicists or astronomers to make a comment, and then they choose to go to look at the spectrum of the planet furthest from the sun and the closest, the odds are on any system, the first and the furthest are not going to be where there would be high civilization. So how long will they continue to play this game where they will ask the astronomers to make a formal report on the least likely of the planets around a sun that Webb, the James Webb, has been able to show, as from what I understand, those seven planets and that sun. So this is what we're up against.
And so
I just wanted to finish this one. Will we ever get to a point where scientists, who are supposed to always have science as their goal, when are they going to be unleashed and released to simply investigate and report the truth to Earth?
And that, I think, is you telling me that we mustn't expect too much from NASA's second presentation, which is due to happen, I believe, October 19th. Linda, it's always a real pleasure to speak with you. When I speak with you, I'm hearing a lifetime of experience talking, and that is why I stay quiet and I listen. I wish you every success with everything that you're doing at the moment.
And dear Howard, you are one of the most intelligent interviewers out there. You always have been. You are perceptive, and it makes it easy for me to let what I consider my mind soul that carries all this information. It's wonderful to relax and let it go. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for doing it for me. And long may you continue. Linda Moulton Howe from EarthFiles.com. Take care.
God bless, Howard.
Your thoughts, of course, welcome. About Linda Moulton Howe from EarthFiles.com. Still going, still bringing us new revelations, still tying it into all of the research that she's already done over all of these decades. And she has got tremendous recall, hasn't she? She can always contextualize the things that she says. I think that's a great gift. And as you can tell, I'm a big fan of Linda ever since the days when I used to listen to her on the Art Bell shows, on his version of Coast to Coast AM. And I remember Linda used to play her reports on a portable tape recorder, or the interviews that she'd done. She'd say, now I've spoken to Colonel so-and-so, or Captain so-and-so, or this expert, or this witness. Here's what they said. Click. And I thought there was a charm in that, that Linda has translated well to her great YouTube videos that I definitely recommend. Okay, more great guests in the pipeline here at the Home of the Unexplained. If you've made a donation recently, thank you very much indeed. And if you want to keep in touch with me, go to my Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. As I said, more great guests in the pipeline here at the Home of the Unexplained. Until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and stay in touch. I was counting those off on my fingers there. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.